Everybody here? Today's what day is it?
Tuesday the 19th.
Tuesday the 19th, and 8:10 in the morning. I open a work session on House Bill 3143. The purpose of this meeting is to consider proposed amendments to see engrossed House Bill 3143. And Steph, could you explain what the amendments we have before us?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As of this morning, there are three sets of amendments that have been distributed. One was distributed yesterday and the other two this morning. Just for the benefit of the House members, first of all, I'll say that the Senate amended the House Bill 3143 to remove the opt-out provision that would allow special taxing districts to elect not to participate in the designation of any of the 10 proposed new enterprise zones. So again, that's just for the benefit of the House members. That's already in the see engrossed bill. And the effect of the proposed conference committee amendments, the dash C-15s that were distributed yesterday, would exempt a company in an enterprise zone that has had a fire this month in July 2005 from the requirement to pay back taxes because of reduction in operations or failure to meet other conditions of the enterprise zone. That's to do with a very specific situation that you'll hear about from the requester of the amendment. The proposed C-16 amendments that were distributed this morning from Representative Smith authorized port districts to sponsor or request enterprise zone designations. And we also noticed this morning in the dash 16s there is a provision relating to electronic commerce zones, and during part of the discussion we think that's in there from Legislative Council to be consistent with another bill that's in the process, House Bill 2234. And the dash C-17 amendments are putting the opt-out back into the bill, is my understanding. Okay. So those are the three sets of amendments. Mr. Chair, Mary Ayala from Legislative Revenue Committee is with us this morning as well. She has done a legislative revenue impact statement for the dash 15s that should be at your place today, but she did not have the dash 16s or 17s in order to do a revenue impact statement. Because the history on this bill is fairly long and the votes are interesting, we included the vote sheet for the bill history in your packet as well.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mary.
Do you have any information to share with us this morning?
Just the revenue impacts, I believe, for the C-17 amendment, which is similar to the A and Gross version that we did with the House. If it hasn't changed substantively, and I don't believe it has, again, preliminary-wise, it would be slightly lower if we put the opt-out back into the bill, and it would be minus $1.05 million for 0507 and $5.5 million negative for 0709.
Okay.
And it's slightly higher for the current Senate version. And we estimated the cost on the C-15 as a non-recurring impact because we called to find out. I asked someone to check that amount, and these would be based on the past taxes that would be due if the company that burnt down the building burnt down, if that company could no longer meet its obligations with employment and whatever, well then, as under current law, it would have to go and pay its back taxes from the time that it started receiving the tax abatement. So the $70,000 covers that 2 years prior taxes.
Okay. All right, that's it. Okay, thank you very much. With that, and we are going to look at the C-15 amendment, and who is here to testify on this C-15? Senator,
come on up.
Can we just put the dash 15s in, Mr. Chair, and not have to listen?
The senator says, yeah, you bet. Maybe if you are chair, you might be able to do it. But,
Welcome, Senator.
Thank you, Chair Lem and committee members. Thank you very much for the opportunity to address you this morning regarding the C-15s. The C-15s is an amendment that we're requesting that this committee put into the bill, House Bill 3143, for the purpose of allowing for a company that resides in Sutherland, Oregon, to not be obligated to pay back on the taxes that would be owed under the current law for enterprise zones. This is a situation, unfortunately, they're the primary employer in Sutherland. They had a fire earlier this month that actually devastated it to the point of where they're not able to continue operations. John Murphy is the owner, CEO of the company. He and I had an opportunity to speak. Senator Cruz and I have been working, and I know that he's made contact with some of the members on this committee, and we've also worked very closely with the Douglas County commissioners. I believe each of you probably have received a cover letter that the Board of Commissioners have sent. There's no opposition that I know of for the C-15s, and what this will actually do will allow for the Murphy Plywood Company to hopefully rebuild on-site and be able to be operational probably within about an 18-month period. They're not exactly sure when they'll be able to be back up. They're still determining whether they're going to be able to rebuild, but what we do know is by having this tax obligation taken away from them, it will make it more of a positive for them to rebuild and restart up their operations there in Sutherland. What we also know in my discussions with the Oregon Economic and Community Development Department Commission that they're working hand in hand, and what we expect is that if they are able to rebuild on site, they will come back under the enterprise zone. They will start a new process and will be able to actually, let's say, fulfill their obligation and commitment to the community, to the county, and to the state. So if there's any questions, I'll be glad to try to answer them, and there's probably some other people that might be able to give you more of the technical information that I may not be able to provide you.
Any questions? Okay, no questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your time.
Coming up. Anyone else like to testify on this C-15? It's none. All right. And let me see. Who is the person that answer some of the questions on this issue? Can you come on up? What's his name?
Steve.
Yes, Steve Vincent. Yes. And would you like to speak on this?
Sure. Steve Vincent, representing Avista Utilities. I do economic development and community development in the Southern Oregon region on behalf of our utility. I'd be happy to answer any questions. I think Senator Prozanski nailed it. The embarrassing situation that we'll have as we as a state sit down at the table with Murphy Plywood and negotiate an incentive package in order to encourage them to rebuild, we've got a clawback provision in statute that basically comes back around and asks them, where are those new jobs that you agreed to create in order to have your new plant and equipment waived to property taxation? And there is no forgiveness of an unusual or unforeseen circumstance. And so this amendment narrowly addresses that. It adds a lot of good faith to our ability to negotiate this with us. My utility in particular has negotiated with Murphy Plywood and gas contracts, and they are some of the toughest negotiators for good reason. They're looking out for their bottom line. But what I've been told is that everything that we are doing as a community and as a state to encourage them to rebuild is having a significant impact on basically the emotion of it and how they feel about being able to rebuild. So I believe that this piece, which has been discussed with the owners, is important to them, and I think it'll really help us get a long way in getting them to rebuild.
Okay. Any questions? Representative Smith.
Well, I just have a quick comment. Mr. Vincent introduced himself as involved in economic development. I want to correct that. He is Mr. Economic Development for Southern Oregon, and he definitely knows his business when it comes to enterprise zones in the state of Oregon.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other questions? if this, without this bill, how much do they have to pay the back taxes?
I've been told it's about $70,000.
That's it.
Yeah, so, you know, in the scheme of things, maybe it's not a lot of money, but again, I mentioned it's the issue of faith, and, you know, we often hear complaints from the public about, gee, the government on this side doesn't know what this side's doing. It's a little unusual for us to present incentives and resources to them, and at the same time, say, oh, but why, by the way, here's an invoice for $70,000 because you didn't meet your increase in job obligation. Where are those jobs?
Okay, are they planning to review the meal again?
They have not made that decision, and that's, and I have to compliment the state. In this circumstance, the Economic Development Department and the local partners have been very quick to respond. In fact, everybody was at the table before the smoke was gone to try and encourage the owners to rebuild. So this really helps a lot.
And if they are not rebuilding the mill, then why should we give them a tax break? We are just giving and hoping they create more jobs in the area.
Well, Chair Lynn, I think that we have to trust that this is going to make a difference. We're betting on the come that this is going to happen. If we forgive this and they decide not to rebuild, sure, that, you know, that's going to probably be a sore spot for us. But I don't believe that's going to happen. I believe that we're going to get to a place where we're going to see 250 people back to work in Sunderland in an economy that really can't afford to lose these jobs.
Okay. Do you know, in the past, did we forgive any taxes because of the fire in the past, or this is the first time we are doing it?
Yes, Chairman, this is the first time. As far as I know, I have to ask the department, but I don't believe that a circumstance like this has ever come up. It's fairly unusual. We have a long history with the enterprise zone statutes and the incentive.
Okay. What happened to any other companies in the state because of the fire asking us to forgive their back taxes? Then since we already setting up the precedent, we might have to do it again. What is going to be impact in the future?
Well, this amendment's very narrow. I guess the precedent is that we could find ourselves back in front of you to ask for a one-time narrow amendment again. That's certainly possible. I suppose there's a broader policy discussion, not now at the end of this session, but how do you put a place in statute for circumstances like these? And just haven't had the time to explore that. Be a great conversation for the interim, perhaps, but I don't think we can get there right now.
Okay, Mr. Chair.
And Representative
Schaffler, I'll help you out. Schaffler, it's a mouthful.
All right.
Thanks.
Thank you.
I have no problem with this, especially if they put those 250 people back to work. But I want to remind you, the next session will be here before we know it. We're getting closer to it every day. But I just want you to know, if 2 years from now you come back here and you ask for anything and they don't do this, then I'm going to say, well, you all came before me and got a $70,000 tax break and nothing happened for it. So I want you to know what you're putting on the line here.
Yep, I understand.
Okay. Because next time you come and ask me for something, if this doesn't happen, I'm going to go, well, last time we didn't get off so well. So I just want to put that out there. I have no problem with this. I am a big supporter of the wood fiber product industry in this state. I understand. I was at the Roseburg Wood Products Hinkle Creek Paired Watershed project down there, and one of the presenters said that in Douglas County, we can grow, in the same time and space, we can grow 15 board feet relative to the one board foot in Canada due to the growing conditions. So I want to do everything I can to help the wood fiber industry down there and in the whole state and get some logs to them while we're at it. But I just want to remind you, for $70,000, which may seem like a lot of money, but you'll probably be back here with bigger fish to fry, and I just want to point that out. Thank you.
Okay. If there's no more questions, then thank you very much. And Is anyone in here object to adopt this C-15? Mr. Chair, the bill, House Bill 3143, I believe.
Do you want a motion?
I move it.
Do you want to move?
Yeah.
Okay, let's move each the amendment.
I move the dash 15s into the bill.
We move dash 15. So, Representative Schaeffler moves dash 15 to be adopted to the House Bill 3143 C. Okay, any objection? No, it's adopted. All right, let's go on to the next one. Dash 16, and Representative Smith, could you explain to us what the bill does?
You bet, Chair Lim, members of the committee. The Dash C-16s are before you a little bit because of my ineptness in that I had been working with Representative Butler on the House side back when 3143 was in its infancy stage, but because I got tied up down in Ways and Means, I missed a hearing and missed an opportunity to try and add these amendments in at that time. After working with Legislative Revenue, they said, well, chances are this bill is going to end up in conference committee, so have amendments ready and bring these forward. So that's where we are today. What the C-16s do is it adds the word port after cities and counties, and it would allow the ports to apply to the Director of Economic and Community Development for designation of an area as an enterprise zone. They would be able to do this independently. They would have the same abilities and obligations as a city or a county. They would be required to meet the same obligations and restrictions that are placed upon them both by statute and by rule. And in the event that a complication occurred in the management of the enterprise zones, they would also be subject to the rules and to the statutes that currently are over the cities and the counties. If you go back to the Section 16, it explains a little bit of this, that in the event a application is submitted and it's not complete or doesn't satisfy the requirements of the department has the right to seek additional information. So what this, colleagues, does is it places ports at the same level as cities or counties. Over the last couple months, we've had discussions with the cities and counties on this, trying to make these amendments work, and we're now before you with the C-16s.
All right, any questions? Senator Johnson.
Thank you. Going back, this is a question for Representative Smith. Going back to Section 16, Sub 2, it says if the application is incomplete, it can be rejected, but it seems to say that if the application is complete, it automatically is approved.
That wasn't the intent.
shall approve the request is how I read that, and that certainly doesn't leave very much flexibility for the department.
I guess I would need the department to come up and explain how that would work.
The other question while the witness is coming up is this seems to give authority to any port without taking into consideration, frankly, the competency of the port. There are some very small ports with all volunteer staff. There are some extremely sophisticated ports with very competent paid staff. And my concern about this is that this doesn't do anything to differentiate between ports that would be financially and to a degree of sophistication able to manage this kind of an undertaking. I am concerned about how broad it is.
Yeah, our hope with this would be that the department would use its discretion, and if there's an inept...
But then you tie their hands over here on page 14 and say they shall approve.
And we may need to adjust that before the day is over. I would hope that if we have an inept public port and they're not capable of meeting the duties and responsibilities of an enterprise zone, that the department would say, hey, you're not ready. for this, just like they would with any city or county who also would be managed under the same rules. So I don't have an answer for you on shall approve the request on page 14 as if that was automatic.
Chair Lim,
yes, I'll try to explain. Chair Lim, Senator Johnson, Representative Smith, members of the Conference Committee on House Bill 3143-C. My name is Arthur Fish with the Oregon Economic and Community Development Department, and I've worked on enterprise zones and business incentives now for a little while. And we've just seen the Dash C-16s, and, you know, the respective to this issue about some existing zones and ports wanting to join those, the language in Section 16 we find, you know, very clear. It would be an obligation on our part to approve a port joining an existing coast zone sponsor, but if the cities and counties also agreed to that, we don't really see that as a problem. Even a port that has fairly low staff levels or isn't, you know, if they're really interested and the cities and counties want them to join, there shouldn't really be any problem with them being just an additional co-sponsor. You don't need necessarily a whole lot of staff or anything for that. So we've never, you know, and I've seen earlier versions of this language, and I think the Section 16 language is, for our purposes, something we can administer, and we'd like to work with the good representative from Heppner to try to solve whatever issues there are. We did have some points with respect to future zones and what the clarity there would be as far as when a port would need to sponsor or whatever, and get that clarified. But I do have to point out something that this amendment would do in addition to the port sponsorship issue. And that is, any of our suggestions didn't make it into any of this, so I'm not sure how this occurred, but...
Really quick, before you move on.
By all means.
That's fine. Cool.
Back on Section 16 so we can clarify, because I want to make sure we're clear on this question. This is a port that's about to become a co-sponsor, not an independent.
Right, and it's actually one that is, Mr. Chair...
Yes.
It's one that's located in whole or in part within the existing enterprise zone, but I just wanted to be sure that we were clear on the language, because I think the intent is to allow ports to act unilaterally and create enterprise zones, but the Section 16 specifically speaks to one that is located in whole or
right.
Yeah.
Right.
So this is just strictly, this would be sort of a, I don't know, this would just get us through for a while with zones that already exist. And let's say there's a port there that just, you know, wants to be part of the fund, so to speak. And so they just go to the city and county and say, can we be part of the zone sponsorship? And if everyone agrees, I mean, why shouldn't we? I would think it the shall is appropriate there. The part about a port, and this is a little clarified better than what I saw before, on page 1, it says when we designate a zone, that designation application could come entirely from a port. That's on page 1 in the future. Yes, Senator.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I still am not quite clear on this. Let's go back to Section 16, because we are jumping back and forth between the unilateral creation of an enterprise zone and a port located in whole or in part within an enterprise zone.
Yes.
The question that I have here is that if a port is located in whole or in part within the enterprise zone, it can submit a request to be a co-sponsor. Mm-hmm. There doesn't appear to be language anywhere that suggests, particularly with this department shall approve the request, that if the city or the county didn't want a co-sponsor.
Lines 18 through 20 on page 14, it says the request shall include a copy of the resolution of the governing body of each current sponsor of
thank
the enterprise.
You, thank you, thank
so
you.
So that would
thank
take
you.
Care of that.
Thank
yeah.
you. And should one of those then not be submitted, that then the application would be deemed incomplete?
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Absolutely. But before we, Section 9, I think it is, does something that really should be cognizant of. What Section 9 would do is do something that I believe the House Bill 2234-
A or B originally had, I think it was both A and B, originally submitted that any zone could become an e-commerce enterprise zone. House Bill 2234 was scaled back to the original proposal of only six, allowing six more enterprise zones to be e-commerce zones. And the language in Section 9 would bring that back. And that bill went back to the Revenue Committee in the House side and was changed to C engrossed, and it was scaled back. So this is a pretty big issue that I have no idea how it got here, type of thing. So I just wanted to make sure you were aware of that. That's an important issue here. Aside from the port sponsorship thing, which, like I say, we're fine with these give or take some questions about, you know, some clarity with respect to, you know, how sport sponsorship works with regards to new designations in the future.
Okay. Any more questions?
Page 14, line 7. Can you explain line 7 and 8?
Yeah. Okay. In order for... written agreement. That is, Chair Lim, Representative Smith, members of the committee, that language is already in section, where is that? That's other language from House Bill 2234. Would extend the sunset on the long-term enterprise zone program. You know, we have the 3 to 5 year program, which, you know, you were hearing about just a moment ago with Murphy. Then there's this rarely used but increasingly interesting and sought after longer-term program in rural areas. And in House Bill 2234, which does increase the number of e-commerce zones, we did seek this change, and somehow it got in this bill too, just as that is. And again, I'm not quite clear on how that happened. It probably arose from conflict, from an attempt to develop conflict amendments relative to an earlier version of House Bill 2234, and then, you know, that would be my explanation.
Okay.
Chair, thank you. If you could help refresh my memory on the enterprise zone, the qualifications in terms of geographic, because we have the references to the different parts in statute, urban and non-urban.
Yeah.
So as it pertains to the port specificity in this amendment.
Mm-hmm.
Tying into the enterprise zone, other requirements, are there ports that would be excluded because of their location from this? Would this include all ports in the state based on the definition of what's eligible for an enterprise zone? Trying to get a feel for who's all would be covered by this.
Okay. Chair Lim, Senator Metzger, members of the conference committee, any port district that exists could take advantage of these sponsorship things anywhere in the state. So they could seek a new zone down the future that this bill might create. Plus, of course, the 49 existing zones all expire and are subject to redesignation and open competition. And a good 40 or so of those will go through the cycle, so to speak, in the next several years. So they could seek it on their own. A city could seek an enterprise zone, and based on fairly cursory reading of this language, they could seek an enterprise zone on their own without a port and without a county, as they can do if it's entirely within city limits. But if a county wanted to create a enterprise zone, or it included some unincorporated territory, my reading of the language would be that you would need not only the county but also the port to be a sponsor. And our only concern with that is we don't know if all ports really want to do that and be obligated as such. That would be our only concern with that, because there might be some counties and cities that just want to go forward. But in a sense, because we have language, one or more cities, counties, and ports may apply, and that's the case where you have multiple sponsorships. So that would be the way it would work, but it could be any port, to be sure, rural or urban.
Mr. Chair, can I follow up?
Go follow up.
So what I'm thinking of specifically, like the Port of Portland, a very large port. Now, with those properties, and they lease them out to various businesses, out on Terminal 6, or if you have the airport area itself, those property taxes, within those properties within the port area, where do those property taxes go?
The property taxes on port property, as long as it's being held by the port and it's not being used by a private business, it is exempt. Okay.
But when the ones where they lease out,
once they lease or sell to a private company, then that land or any improvements on the land are subject to regular property taxation, including the port's levy. Now, if there's an enterprise zone and somebody builds some new property on there, then it is exempt for up to 5 years if it meets the various requirements, some of which the state has established or are established in statute, plus some that the city of Portland has imposed.
But those property taxes would go to the regular jurisdictions, county or cities, that
correct.
You have.
Correct. And urban renewal district,
well,
too.
I guess, and then my question would be, Mr. Chair, would be on the new zones, the ones that are mentioned in Section 4, where it says a port may apply for designation of an area within the port as an enterprise zone without the consent of a city or county.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess my concern would be there, tell me how this would play out. If I'm the Port of Portland and I have these very expensive business properties, say along the terminals or even within the airport area, and say, hey, you know, we really want to work out a deal with Lufthansa or Boeing or somebody else to do something here.
Mm-hmm.
We don't receive their taxes. You know, Multnomah County or the city of Portland would receive them, but they're not. The way I read this, they wouldn't be a player in this. The port could, on a new zone, you know, just says that we can apply on our own. We don't have to have the approval of the city of Portland or Multnomah County, but they're the ones that would be subject to losing those property taxes. Did I read this wrong? Because that's what it would sound like. They wouldn't have a requirement. They wouldn't have the ability to veto if someone said, "Hey, I want to create a new deal. You have these properties here by Terminal 6, XYZ company, and we're going to apply for an enterprise zone for you to do X."
Mm-hmm.
Those taxes go to the city of Portland and Multnomah County. We were going to be abating those if we make this deal, but they're not at the table. The port unilaterally can make that deal because that property happens to be within the port. Is that how I read this?
Yeah, Senator Metzger, Representative Chair Lim, members of the committee. Yeah, it could happen that way. Certainly, Port of Portland, if they had some property that wasn't already in an enterprise zone, and most of the Portland enterprise zone already includes most of the port property you may have in mind. But yeah, they could, if there was an opportunity to seek designation, get that zone designated in some other area, and then for some project. But they couldn't come to us overnight and get it designated that quickly. But yeah, they could do it all by themselves. Sure.
All right. Any other questions? Is there any representative from court? Because I haven't heard either support or opposition on this amendment. I'd like to hear from court.
Can we do one thing before that? Can you? I think it's really important for this panel to understand the qualifications to receive an enterprise zone. Can you go through Section 8?
Oh, yes.
I think it's important to understand what goes into these.
Yes. Chair Lim, Representative Smith, members of the Conference Committee, and the department is, fine with the idea of providing for court sponsorship, and we're happy to help make that, fit your desires. But one of the things that doesn't change at all, of course, is that the actual area, regardless of city, county, or port, or whomever's applying for an enterprise zone, that area has to meet certain economic hardship criteria. Well, unemployment's too high, income's too low, something of that nature, as you can see starting on page 5 and turning to page 6. There is some case-by-case discretion that the department can deal with, and we've set up some rules with some alternatives. But it's, that is, Representative's absolutely right. There's nothing, that's good stuff to bear in mind.
Right. So Ken, could you give us your...
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Westland.
Back to Section 9, page 7. So similar to the... thrust of Senator Johnson's question, the bolded 4, Section 9, the department shall review and approve applications for electronic commerce designation, is that a mandatory clause? If they apply and the application is complete, it shall be approved?
Chair Lim, Senator Westland, this is the testimony we gave with respect to this language on an earlier bill, and yes, I mean, if they gave an application, we would set up some criteria for the application, so it wouldn't be automatically every zone's an e-commerce zone. They'd have to submit some paperwork and stuff, but, you know, beyond certain, requisite points, you know, yes, we would be obliged to then designate it for e-commerce purposes for any zone who desired that and met some basic submission requirements.
Sure.
Chair.
What? Well, just to follow up?
Yes.
To that, I didn't sit on these committees. Could you give us a basic explanation as to what an e-commerce zone is and what the rationale was for limiting it to six as opposed to what appears to be unlimited in this section?
Okay, great. Chair Lim, Senator Westland, members of the Conference Committee on House Bill 3143. This is a kind of another issue that, I didn't come prepared to deal with today, but 2234, which is on the Senate floor today, would allow for six more e-commerce enterprise zones. Four were allowed in 2001. They have gone out. One of them, Medford, has been tremendously successful, and I believe Steve Vincent here is an excellent witness to that. And the one in Portland, one in Harney County, and one in Roberts Creek. And they are all doing some very interesting things. We would allow six. We wanted to seek six more, as we thought was a conservative increase, because a lot of other enterprise zones want them. And there was discussion about this sort of thing. Let's let everyone do it. Okay. Why do they want an e-commerce zone? Well, e-commerce businesses can generally use an enterprise zone anyway for a property tax break. The big thing that an e-commerce designation allows in an enterprise zone is an additional income tax credit, so that the business who invests in e-commerce assets can receive a tax credit equal to 25% of the value of those e-commerce assets. So it's an additional sort of layered benefit to using the enterprise zone for e-commerce businesses, and I think the marketing and efforts by the people in Medford show how potent it can be. And other enterprise zones, and when we had the four available in 2002 for designation, we had like 14 applicants, and we know at least of a good 30 enterprise zones out there that very well would consider an application for any extra zone. So there is some reason for wanting to do more than six. But the House decided went that down that direction and then backed up on it anyway. So.
Okay. Senator Johnson.
Following on Senator Wesson's line of questioning, wouldn't the limited number of these give the agency some discretion to help focus business in certain places?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I have heard my colleagues who represent parts of Washington County say what we don't want is any more growth. Medford, on the other hand, used this e-commerce designation very strategically and recruited and created a lot of jobs as a result of it. With an unbridled proliferation, don't we lose some of the strategic value of helping these companies settle in places in the state where we are desirous of more growth rather than not wishing additional growth and stress on schools and stress on other infrastructure services?
Chair Lim, Senator Johnson, we wouldn't be able to decide for them. Obviously, they would still need to decide whether to apply or not. So, I mean, if they want it, hopefully, they want it sincerely. If we have a limited number, then we have to make a choice if we have more applicants than we can choose. And we will tend to use criteria like, can they really get some traction out of it? But, I think you're absolutely right. If we raise it up, then there really isn't any. The big issue will be the revenue issues, frankly.
Okay, but the question I'm trying to get at is using the expertise of the department to target growth in certain places and an unbridled proliferation of either, frankly, enterprise zones or the e-commerce zones, when does that become self-defeating when everything basically qualifies? I mean, I'm trying to see limitations to incent development in certain places or to achieve certain strategic economic goals by the use of these tools rather than to have any port be able to apply for them. The appearance here of despite the bill, unbridled e-commerce designation. I'm just trying to figure out when's enough enough.
Chair Lim, Senator Johnson, I would agree with your point that, you know, there is, you know, you sort of lose that edge, that distinctiveness, that ability maybe to even administer with a great deal of attention and so forth. Where that point is, though, I really wish I could say. We do have an awful lot of enterprise zones already. I mean, we're not getting a lot of clamoring. The 10 that this bill would allow already, we don't expect to see them oversubscribed anytime soon, to be honest, because of all the ones that are terminating and needing to be reapplied. But it would take the pressure off of those that are seeking redesignation or reapplication for a regular zone. With e-commerce zones, yeah, I mean, I think that's where some of the four existing ones started to complain. They wanted to make sure that, you know, if we were going to allow more, that it was delayed a little bit so that they had that sort of special premature for a while. There are probably quite a few other places around the state that could really get some use out of this e-commerce ability as well. So we're certainly all for increasing the number, but allowing every enterprise zone is a big step. And we're not advocating that, to be sure.
Thank you. Okay, and Representative Shoffler.
Thank you. It's a mouthful.
Thank you.
But as far as the limitations go, the qualifications and limitations under Section 8 that for enterprise zone, they also, you have to be inside an enterprise zone that meets those qualifications and limitations before you can apply for an e-commerce zone inside that enterprise zone. Isn't that correct? And wouldn't that put limitations on where and when you can apply for this? Am I reading this correctly?
Chair Lim, Representative Shoffer, you're right. Obviously, you have to be an existing enterprise zone that was at one time designated based on meeting those qualifications, which aren't the tough. I mean, you know, the areas that can meet them are more numerous than the areas that can't, give or take the population issue around Portland. But I think the senator's point is well taken too, in that there, you know, with so many enterprise zones, it does lose that distinctiveness and everything.
I just want to clarify.
Yeah.
Far be it from me to argue with the good senator. I've been down that road before.
Okay. Yes. Janet has the questions too.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You had mentioned that there were some other things that the department would have liked to have seen in the ports amendment that didn't make it into the amendment.
Yeah, we, Chair Lim, staff, members of the committee, yeah, we just had some technical things about how to clarify, you know, what, you know, how, you know, I mean, I think it's good what this is a change, this idea that a port can do this without the consent of a city or county. I mean, I'm not saying it's good or bad, I'm just saying it's clearer. It does clarify one point. We had some other technical points that we would prefer be clarified so that if this language is placed in statute, we can go forward and make sure that we know exactly who's got to do what before an enterprise zone can be done, and whether it's a right for a port to be a sponsor or an obligation, in which case, but we think, you know, right or discretion is fine. But it does need to be clarified perhaps better.
Okay. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair Lim. Colleagues, on Section 9, this is a section I have to admit to you is new and unexpected for me. I did not know this was in the bill, and Janet and I have been scrambling to figure out who put this in the bill. This isn't where I was intending to go with this amendment. What I might suggest is that on line 20, where it says the department shall review and approve, that we add language that would say no more than whatever the department and this committee feels is appropriate. You know, perhaps 10. The department shall review and approve no more than 10 zones for electronic commerce designation. My intention was not to actually, Section 9 isn't even mine, but the more I look at it, I couldn't support that being wide open.
Okay. Senator Johnson.
I think it would be important to note some level of consistency between whatever language we put in here and the bill that we're voting on the floor this morning that I think is 6.
Well, and I think this may be a conflict.
Mr. Chair.
Resolution.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Or amendment, excuse me.
Okay. All right. And hold on one second. We'd like to finish this question first. Already in the enterprise zone, and that any electronic that
zones is limited in the 59 proposed the enterprise zone area only. Mm-hmm. So whatever number, how many number might be, is limited in this 59.
Correct.
I think that's the limitation.
Yes, that would be the effective limitation with this language. Well, whether that's too much, I don't know.
Okay. And before we go on, and Ken, since you are here, before we go on, and could you give us your thought on this 16 amendment?
I'd be happy to, Mr. Chair. Ken Armstrong, representing the Oregon Ports Group, which is comprised of all 23 ports, public ports in the state of Oregon. A couple of comments. Of course, we are supportive of the C-16s. In response to Senator Metzger's question, I am seeing the C-16s on 3143 for the first time this morning, but it has been my impression that a port could not unilaterally, if I understood your question correctly, decide for a piece of property that was within the city limits of Portland, decide to establish an enterprise zone without the consent and concurrence of the city. If that's what you were driving at, Senator, I don't believe that could be the case. My reading of the bill and the amendment would be that a port could do it unilaterally only where it is an area where there are no other overlapping jurisdictions. That might not be correct, but that's my impression.
And if it met the criteria of an enterprise.
Correct, sir. That's right, Senator.
Yeah, I'd like to see what you see on that. I mean, certainly the qualifying language is a valid point, but I'm just looking at Section 4 and line 17 through 19, starting at the end of line 17, where it says a port may apply for designation of an area within the port as an enterprise zone without the consent from the city or county.
But I believe, Senator, that there is also, when we refer back to page 14 of the bill where it requires the resolutions of the city or county, that's where where you've got an overlapping area that it does require the approval of the other jurisdictions. I think that the lines 18 and 19 on page 1, and I would look to Mr. Fish for his read on that, would really apply to those areas that are unincorporated and would not fall within an overlap with the city. At least that's my understanding of it. I'd be interested if Mr. Fish reads that the same way.
Chair Lim, the House has to go to the floor here in 3 or 4 minutes.
Yeah.
During that time, staff and I can work with legislative council to figure out where Section 9 and Section 10 came from and how to make that work with the bill that's currently on the Senate floor, and be prepared to come back with a knowledgeable answer as to what's actually going on here.
Okay. And before on this issue, when we're talking about port here, does it clarify the issue is a public port or a private port?
Public port. I believe it references a public port as organized under ORS 777, Mr. Chair.
And so there's no question, there's no gray area. This is for the public.
That is correct, sir.
Chair Lim, these statutes fall under 285A, B, and C, and port is a defined term in 285A 666, ORS 285A 666.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Okay. Senator, listen.
Could Mr. Fish answer Mr. Armstrong's question with regard to the language Section 4, lines 18 and 19, that the intent of this is for ports that do not fall within an incorporated area, but, I mean, they would within a county someplace.
Yeah. Chair Lim, Senator Westland, members of the Conference Committee. You know, there's always going to be a county there, and sometimes there's always going to be a city, and that's kind of where you get into needing to really be fairly clear about what's intended in spelling it out. Section 16 is just strictly for existing enterprise zones, an enterprise zone that already exists in which the port is not a sponsor, and how they can become a sponsor. And that's fine as far as we're concerned. Section 4, though, does not clarify everything, but it does clarify very clearly in our view that if there's an opportunity to apply for an enterprise zone, a port could apply for it by itself for land within the city or county without regard to whether they want to be part, whether they like it or not.
could just reset.
I mean, without, it's pretty clear to us.
Why would they want to do that? If an enterprise zone already exists, discuss why co-sponsorship, joining an existing enterprise zone for a port would be such a benefit.
Chair Lim, Senator Johnson, members of Commerce, I really don't understand beyond just the fact that they can play a more closer part with one of the greater economic, the best economic development tools around, and many of the ports, but not all, and I think that's important to remember. Many of the ports are very into economic development, and they want to work very closely with the cities and counties, and this would behoove them. I'm sure the Port of Coos Bay would take advantage of this and would be welcomed with open arms. Well, I think so. And I'm sure, you know, I'm sure there'd be other cases. I'm not sure how many ports really would jump at this. I mean, it's not, I mean, I've never heard of a great deal of desire, but it's certainly a reasonable idea. But to have them go on alone, I don't know. I don't know I like to see everybody get together more. So I'd be more inclined to encourage that approach.
Okay. Senator Metzger.
Thank you, Chair. I know since our House members are going to be heading to the floor, just one suggestion from me, Representative Smith, would be, because I'm familiar with the bill that came through our Revenue Committee that we are voting on, 3452 this afternoon, is my recommendation would be, just Section 9 and 10 are eliminated. It's just a different attempt to do what we are already doing on the floor, you know, which we are limiting. This is unlimiting. It's unrelated to your other issue, and I think that could create problems, not mentioning conflicts. But and then secondly, on whatever the discussion that we've had here about the port and what their authority might be to independently do something, I would ask that you just check, not only with legislative council, but with the city and county people who I see are in the room, and make sure that if we were to adopt something, we don't get sabotaged after that and saying, well, you know, we think this is terrible. So I would make sure that the city and counties can come up and say, yeah, we're okay with this, so they don't, you know, later have a different opinion.
I would share with you on that just very quickly. I fully concur with all of your comments. 9 and 10, I see no reason why we wouldn't strike those. And in terms of communication with the counties and cities, we've tried to do that, and we look forward to having them come on up.
Great.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, so how many public ports do we have at this time?
Ken? Mr. Chair, Ken Armstrong, 23 public ports.
23. Since we do not know how many ports are going to take advantage of this enterprise zone, and since we're increasing 10, if we might have some problems, since we do not foresee what's going to happen, I don't think it's going to happen all at once, taking all, but in my opinion, we should limit how many, maybe one a year for a port, so make sure the other, that the enterprise ones might be available.
Mr. Chair, I guess in response to that, I would be concerned that ports, if the language goes forward, not have restrictions that are not similarly applied to cities and counties. However, I will also say that, as Mr. Fish said, of the 23 public ports, very few are going to be interested in pursuing this as a tool. There's a number of ports that aren't involved directly in economic development activity anyway. You know, they remove snags from rivers and that sort of thing. And so it's going to be a pretty small number, certainly a much smaller number, that would be interested in setting up their own enterprise zone. Most, what I think, if they were going to be involved with this, would be interested in being a participant with a city and or a county in a zone.
Senator Johnson.
Following on that line then, Ken, and taking off of your answer, then why not limit it, other than it's just we don't want to have to do anything cities and counties don't have to do, and that doesn't seem to be a real good reason to pass legislation.
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, I guess because I don't know how many ports we're talking about that are going to be interested in pursuing this, an arbitrary restriction of one a year doesn't make sense to me, but that's certainly something that, you know, we're more than happy to discuss and be open to if that's the committee's desire.
Pilot project to see whether or not there is interest, that you start out by limiting it to one and find out what the competitive field looks like. There certainly are ports that easily, I think, could manage this kind of undertaking. There are others I have very sincere doubts about, and I certainly don't want to hamper the ports with a possibility of success with unnecessary limitations. Conversely, I think caution should be exercised in just opening the floodgates.
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, I agree with your point, and I think we might want to, if we're going to limit it, we might want to think about a number like three, so that if you had one on the coast as well as one on the river, and then some other that was interested in very actively pursuing this, they'd have the ability to do that and not just one. But, you know, this is one of those things that we're willing to work with the committee to see whatever the committee's comfortable with.
One more follow-up for either one of you gentlemen. I've come away from the conversation that has occurred this morning with the impression that the agency has not promulgated criteria for ports. Would your standard criteria be applicable for ports in evaluating whether or not a port could undertake an enterprise zone?
Chair Lim, Senator Johnson, members of the Commerce Committee. Yeah, we would, you know, we have some criteria. It's mostly just applied in a competitive sense that we look at, you know, are they have a zone manager appointed or plans to appoint one and that sort of thing. But I should point out this whole idea of ports seeking an enterprise on themselves, I'm not sure how likely that's to be used. The only place I can think of where there's an active port where there's not already an enterprise zone, Port of Astoria. I mean, Clatsop County is devoid of enterprise zones essentially right now. They could maybe take advantage of this, maybe, and I say that in a good way. But the key thing to think here is not so much existing zones in terms of ports voluntarily wanting to join under the Section 16 language, but really, as these zones all expire, most of them in the next several years, who's going to do what? I mean, and I want to make sure that there's some clarity, and frankly that, you know, even though we might have some zones to spare, if you will, that people still work together and we don't have a lot of, zones right next to each other basically doing the same thing. And so, you know, I would just encourage that we clarify, I mean, allow it technically for a port perhaps to do this on their own, but that we really make it true that any city county does need to at least invite them to join and that sort of thing.
We're obviously not going to conclude our work today. Is it possible for you to bring back some kind of a picture that shows where enterprise zones exist now and what potential for overlap there already is in certain areas? I think that might be very informative in instructing our deliberations.
Sure.
Yes. Before we adjourn that the recess, what is our choice, this afternoon or tomorrow morning? What's the sun aside?
Well, I'm guessing tomorrow morning.
I think there's enough issues here that you probably would want to give enough time to do it.
Okay, so tomorrow morning, 8 o'clock looking good? The same place?
We're assuming.
Okay. How about the hours?
Maybe give it another day.
We're not going on vacation, are we?
not until I say
I'll be here then, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Jeff, how you doing?
The only concern I have is budget work is ongoing and continuous, and we're at the whim of the chair. But why don't we plan 8 a.m. tomorrow morning?
If tomorrow morning, 8 a.m.? Okay, so it should be a recess.
Adjourn
it? Okay. We are going to adjourn at this time, and we are going to reconvene 8 o'clock. It's the same room if it's available. If not,
we'll let you know.
Yeah, we'll let you know. Okay. So 8 o'clock tomorrow morning, the same room if there is no differences of the room. Thank you very much for your coming. I think this is more complicated than you expected, and so we'll see you tomorrow. Thank you very much.